Begin after six taps. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the FlixWise podcast. I'm your host and ruler of this playground, Lady P. And joining me in the sandbox today is sensitive jock, Miss Emma Gerard.
Hello.
And kicking up a fuss this episode will be the rebellious, rabble-rousing no-goodnik, Mr. Andy Thite.
Tice.
Tice. Jesus.
Sorry, I'm used
Mr.
to it.
Mr. Andy Tice.
Not Jesus, no. Tice.
But close.
I want to be sensitive jock instead.
Next time. Listeners will recall that last week's very special guest, Mr. Kirk Honeycutt, is writing a biography on John Hughes. This inspired me to take a closer look at some of the greatest teen movies ever made. We're going to do a little series wherein each of us pitches a teen film to the FlixWise favorites list, and we'll see which ones make the cut. First up is Andy's entry, the John Hughes 1984 comedy, 16 Candles. Andy's going to walk us through why he thinks 16 Candles is one of the greatest teen movies of all time. Andy, take it away.
I know we've all seen 16 Candles. I might have a little different take on this movie than some of the other people who have seen it here at this table. I believe 16 Candles tells the story of a young Chinese exchange student named Long and his adventures in the Chicago suburbs. Forced into hard labor, pushing lawn mowing machine by his American host family, he takes advantage of a rare field trip to an American cultural experience, in this case, the New Faces Dance. He immediately ditches his assigned family escort. In a classic love at first sight story, he falls for an unjudgmental and caring Amazonian teenage girl who takes him to a fantastic Great Gatsby style party. Caught up in the moment, he overindulges in old style and Blatt's beer. Soon, Chinese boy loses girl, as sadly, his new style American girlfriend disappears in his own alcoholic haze. He soon finds himself in a slight predicament with the host of the lavish party, a handsome cad named Jake, and inadvertently makes romantic advances towards him. Long is swiftly knocked unconscious. The next day, waking up with a hangover, smelling of dog, and hurting from his head to his crotch, he meets again with last night's adversary and proceeds to indulge in a classic six-gun duel of words. The cunning Chinese student tries to outwit Jake by misleading him to believe that the love of his life, Samantha, is getting married to another man that very day. This confuses and frustrates Jake to no end. Even as the door slams shut on Jake's love, the student still taunts him. Married?
Wow, Andy. This movie just got a whole lot better. We clearly saw very different films, but I like your interpretation.
A lot of people are down on Long Duck Dong.
Yeah.
But really, it is a story about him. Some people might feel in this room.
Sure, yeah. Emma, what do you think?
Although, you do kind of bring up the point, it does seem like nothing happens in 16 Candles, but in the case of Long's sort of subplot, there actually is a complete story going on there.
And it's apparently a tragic story.
It is. I mean, it's really, I think a lot of people are also frustrated that Long doesn't get a girl in the end. Like, on top of, like, having to go through this, like, really hurtful, like, racist depiction of a Chinese person. At the end, he's, like, following this, like, beautiful, tall girl around all night, and she obviously likes him. And he doesn't end, like, everyone ends up with somebody at the end except him.
Except for poor Long.
Well, we never know. That could have been answered in the unmade 16 Candles Part 2.
Is that a real thing? I heard Molly Ringwald wants to make a sequel.
Yeah, but it should be called 17 Candles. No, 32 Candles, wasn't it? It was supposed
to
be.
Really?
Yeah, but
17
it's coming.
Going on 30 candles.
There you go. But it never, yeah, it never came to be.
Okay. All right. Well, so did you have an alternate reading of the film, perhaps?
Well, since we are really talking about 16 Candles instead of Long Duck Dong, we're talking about Samantha Baker here. This funny, bordering on slapstick, coming-of-age dramedy takes place over 36 hours in a young girl's life that surround her 16th birthday. The film follows the kind of cute, quirky, perky yet moody Samantha Baker. In his directorial debut, John Hughes uses his muse and suspected crush, Molly Ringwald, to tell this story. Somehow this 33-year-old man, who would have been a hippie when he was that age, was able to write in a format that shows what life was like for a new wave 80s teens. A quick synopsis of this movie is classic teen chick flick. Sam is stuck at an awkward age and is pursued by a guy stuck at an awkward age. Sam is then pursued by a 25-year-old senior who she falls in love with because he looks good.
Yep.
This movie... All the girls seem to love Jake.
Yeah.
This movie moves. There is always something going on that is forwarding the plot. If we need to know what Sam is thinking, sometimes she just says it out loud to no one except us in the theater. And if it is not moving forward, it is being filled in with jokes. Sometimes there are two gags going on at the same time, one in the foreground and one in the back. I believe John Hughes wrote this movie with himself in mind, using Molly Ringwald as his muse. He is a young man, was Farmer Ted the Geek, as most male writers are. He imagined himself as Jake, and in the reality of this space and time, he was the dad, making the young girl he loves understand the ups and downs of life. As shown in the movie, it was the dad that apologizes to Sam for forgetting the birthday. Although this is a supposed chick flick, the women are mostly objectified and misogynized. Sam's first paramour just wants to bag her and get her panties as proof. Jake's girlfriend Carolyn is desired only for her body and looks, and she is only interested in being the richest, most popular couple, and Jake even says she's just interested in having fun. The sister, Ginny, is only interested in the wedding and marrying a man who has loved her for a full 6 months. The wedding only goes off when the husband slash father intervenes to get it on its way. Finally, the music in this movie is amazing. It introduced young Americans to songs we usually didn't hear on the radio. Such things as Love of the Common People by Paul Young, Happy Birthday by Altered Images, Wild Sex in the Working Class by Oingo Boingo, The Specials, Growing Pains by Tim Finn, The Divinyls, culminating in an album-only track by the Thompson Twins, If You Were Here. My only question is, what happened after the kiss?
All right.
Now, let me just say one last thing. After rewatching this movie, one of my top five movies of all time, I have to maybe say it doesn't belong on the top list.
Yeah, sort of muted praise there, Andy. Okay, so the reason that we are talking about 16 Candles, in addition to Kirk Honeycutt's appearance on the last show, Andy sent me his list of possible things that he'd like to submit to our FlixWise favorites list. And it was Herzog.
Anything by Werner Herzog.
Smokey and the Bandit. What were some of the other ones?
It was Smokey and the Bandit, Werner Herzog movies, probably Aguirre, and 16 Candles were my top three.
You made me watch 16 Candles? We could have been watching Smokey and the Bandit.
Well, so that was, I couldn't resist. What is that? What is 16 Candles doing there? So please explain, Andy.
It had a very big effect on this Midwestern boy. Not only the music, the story was fun. I related to Farmer Ted and wanted to be more like him. And I saw a lot of Jakes out there.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so, but do you think it holds up?
It, for its generation and decade, it holds up very well as one of the top 100 movies of all time, an alternate list. Even what I read off is reasons especially not to include it.
It seemed like your list was...
This was a very cathartic experience. Because you told me to speak about 16 Candles, I realized I was wrong.
In a dramatic turn of events.
Well, okay, but I don't think we're looking for movies to be perfect to make it onto the top 100 list. Right. And clearly 16 Candles for a lot of people is like a guilty pleasure or even just a pleasure they don't feel guilty about. But my problem with 16 Candles is that I just see the problems and I don't get drawn into the positives of it. It's not having, like, I like teen movies where like maybe there's like some more counterculture rebels that they wear cool outfits or there's more drugs or something. So I'm wondering like kind of what is your draw into 16 Candles. Like, there's clearly something you like about it, so.
It hit me at the right time of my life where I was in high school, and I was confused about girls, and there was a lot of slapstick in this and a lot of comedy that just resonated with me. I was still a little boy wanting to be a grown man.
I think it's we should point out that prior to John Hughes coming onto the scene, we get a lot of gross out. We get a lot of slapstick. In the 70s, we get a lot of, you know, we get a lot of boob jokes. We get a lot of jokes at teenagers' expense. But this sort of flipped the script on that. This took teenage problems very seriously. And I think that's largely why it endures and why there's still this appeal. I mean, clearly for you, the appeal is nostalgia, it sounds like. But this continues to resonate with future generations. When I saw it when I was 16, I really liked it. But now that I watch it as an adult, there I have some issues with it. And maybe we should... You touched on a few of them. The biggest being the rape jokes. And the racism. And it's really, really hard for me to get past those things. Because other than that, I mean, Emma, I know we were talking and you don't see the appeal of Jake. And that's one of the primary reasons, despite, yeah. You know, despite the racism and the sexism, you just can't get into the story.
It's true. I think, like, if, like, you're really into the romance, I can see why this movie would be a lot more appealing to you.
Right. And I understand Jake's appeal. I understand why Molly Ringwald likes him, and I like that the movie takes Molly Ringwald's desire seriously. So I don't fault the movie for that. But what happens to Caroline is so appalling.
Yes.
And
yes.
I can't really laugh at it. And Emma and I recently rewatched American Pie. Emma watched it for the first time. And there's a scene in that movie where Shannon Elizabeth is filmed, you know, she is unbeknownst to her being filmed during a sex act. And it is blasted all over the internet. And at the time when that came out, I thought that was very, very funny. This was in the the early phases of internet culture. And people hadn't yet killed themselves over things like that.
Yeah.
So, and since then, you know, there have been incidences with kids killing themselves. Just as with 16 Candles, we have things like Steubenville, where this happens in real life, and it's a huge disaster and definitely not something to be laughed at. And I don't know, I don't know if I can necessarily see past that. In order,
that's interesting. Yeah. You know, I always saw it from a male's perspective. Yeah. It's a very male movie.
Yeah.
Even though it could, don't you think it could be considered a chick flick with the romance?
Sure. I think a lot. I think girls love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they love it because it does have a female protagonist. And I think films with female protagonists are usually labeled chick flicks. That is sort of the default.
And another thing with Molly Ringwald, she was not beautiful. Mm-hmm. She was cute.
Yeah.
But a lot of these girls, especially in some of the other movies, such as you named Shannon Elizabeth, are beautiful young women.
Sure.
And these women could probably, I would guess, relate more to Molly Ringwald.
Right. No, I think there is. It's this obvious wish fulfillment fantasy for girls. It wasn't my fantasy as a teenager to date the most popular guy in high school, because I don't think there was a most popular guy in high school. But I could see the appeal there, you know? So
what happened after the kiss?
What happened after the kiss? I think that, I don't know. It seems so sad to think about, but do I think it worked out for those crazy kids? Probably not.
I always saw it that the kiss, it was the end of the movie. It was almost like a Thelma and Louise. The car went off the cliff and stopped. Oh, spoiler alert. And so you don't know exactly what happened. It's promising.
Yeah.
But you know, what do you think happened after
the
kiss?
That's also like, it's probably where you want to end a romance movie too. It's like, you know, like how Love Actually is like only that moment, like through the whole movie. It's like no one wants to know what happened afterward. It's like, I don't know, they were teenagers. Like they either like she got pregnant and they ended up stuck in that town forever, or they broke up soon afterward because they realized they had nothing in common. Right. So
you have no idea how much you hit the nail on the head for the Chicago suburbs, or the whole Midwest. Where they just didn't go to college, and yeah, they raised their child.
I hope for better for poor Molly Ringwald. I don't know, but she is on a show now called like about teen moms. So
she's still acting, really?
Yeah.
She was in a really funny movie. I can't remember the name of it, where it's about fine dining waiters in New York City, and she's like kind of like an aging like waitress who's been doing it for a very, very long time. Yeah. So maybe that was her in the future. She got out of the town.
I hope so.
Courted herself.
So, Andy, do you like John Hughes movies?
I do like a lot of them. You know, I never related to The Breakfast Club. I felt my high school thing was different, and I didn't relate to any of those people. And I don't know. Did you relate to The Breakfast Club
at all?
Okay.
Not at all. I like 16 Candles more than The Breakfast
Club.
Yes,
but people seem to hold Breakfast Club at a higher standard. Maybe they can relate more.
Emma, what do you?
I'm not a super huge fan of The Breakfast Club. I don't know. They do have, like, they have better teen fashion in The Breakfast Club for sure.
Don't you think it's held to a higher standard also?
Yeah, I think so. It seems like sort of like the way that The Breakfast Club is supposed to stand is like this moment, like this day in their lives is supposed to be like a metonym for like them being part of like, you know, a larger culture is sort of what makes people take it more seriously.
Yeah. And they were supposed to all change. Or did that letter at the end that he wrote, did he say we're all going to go back to the way we were? Or did he say we're all changed? I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
I don't know. To me, I saw that movie in high school, and it in no way resembled my high school experience. People were pretty good about ignoring each other at my high school. It wasn't like
there were no jocks shoving you out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, plus the Judd Nelson character was just awful. Yeah. I thought he was just appalling. So in that sense... And also, 16 Candles, it took itself very seriously, and I appreciate, or Breakfast Club took itself very seriously.
Yes.
I appreciate that 16 Candles, there's a lighter touch. A lot of the jokes, as racist and offensive as they are, they're jokes.
Yes, yeah.
That's
a real good point. Breakfast Club did take itself really seriously.
Yeah, it didn't seem to have any, 16 Candles doesn't have any, like, the ambition is lower, and I think that serves it well. Like it doesn't want to stand for all of society or all of our the universal high school experience. This is just a day in this girl's life, and the smaller story I think serves it well.
I know that you and I connected originally. One of the things was our love of music,
right?
And how did you feel about the music? Did you notice the music?
I did.
In 16
Candles? Yeah, I mean it's noticeable. I don't think of Oingo Boingo as being a huge selling act, and there they are. I think that really does, that's one of the reasons the movie holds up, is because it does have a great soundtrack. In fact, most John Hughes movies do have very memorable soundtracks. And most of them have songs named, like, I don't know which came first. The song come first, or does the movie come first?
Like, would the song at the end of The Breakfast Club have been such a big hit
without
it?
Right, exactly, yeah.
It never became a hit, as far as I know. It didn't chart or anything, but it's a beautiful song, and it made me want to delve deeper into, hey, there's more than just the songs on the radio.
Okay. Well, so the movie is obviously flawed, but... it can be kind of a gateway film, which is something that I would want to explore more on the podcast, and that it can lead you to more interesting
things.
Wait,
you're recommending this movie. I hear it. It made the list. It made the list.
I don't know about that. But I think that there's reason to watch it, right?
Yes.
But I think we started off the show talking about Long Duk Dong, but I think we should address... that character. Emma, can you look past this at all? Do you have any interest in looking past the horrible racist caricature?
Well, I mean, like I said, I'm not really drawn into the romance, so it doesn't, I don't know, maybe if there was, like, you're saying there was an unmade sequel, maybe if there was a remake of Long with about him and his story, and he wasn't depicted in that way, that I can... Yeah, like maybe if they took out all of the gong noises and like toned back the, like, I don't even know what you call that, like that sort of like depiction of like speech. And like maybe it could, because like I said, it's like the more interesting story in the movie for sure.
Yeah, it's his experience.
I think his like quest for like one night of hedonism while he can get away from his cruel captors is. Which is, like, definitely more interesting.
Right. And I think John Hughes, yeah. John Hughes, it seems, is aware of that the grandparents are racist and are taking advantage of this poor kid. So at least he's not completely tone deaf when it comes to that. And this does feel like his great escape. But I don't know. Unfortunately, there are those horrible gong noises every time he comes on screen. And
it was a different time. It was. I mean, really, that was borderline. Even back then, it was borderline offensive. And now it is definitely offensive.
Yeah. I mean, when I rewatch, I remember this movie when I initially saw it. I remember that being more, even more offensive than it is. I remember it being more like Breakfast at Tiffany's level offensive. At least they actually got an Asian person on screen. That was good.
But also, like, it's so painful to watch because it's like, you know that actor is from California.
Right.
And it's like, I can't, he probably couldn't get a lot of work. So he took this anyway. And he's really well remembered for playing this character.
Yeah.
But it's so hard for me to watch.
Yeah. And I think he does a decent job giving him life. He seems like a real person, and I'm not inclined to laugh at him. I relate to him in some ways. So this, I think you're right. Your intro was sort of in jest, but I do think this is
sort of in jest. No, I was being funny. That was my attempt at humor, Lady P.
Goodness. But I think it is his story, and I think that it's unfortunate that John Hughes didn't take it more seriously. Or didn't give him, I don't know, that...
It was filler to make it a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
And we laughed at it, right?
Sort of.
Yeah.
Not really.
At the time,
When I first saw it, I guess I might have thought it was funny. But, I don't know, I was kind of misguided as a 16-year-old. I've since rethought it and realized, man, I don't know. Can we... I feel bad because I do feel like we're not giving this. Do you think we're being fair? I don't know.
Do I think
we're do you think I'm being too harsh, Andy? I asked you to bring this in.
I mean, and... on rewatching and intently rewatching at least a couple times, and you saw by what I wrote.
Yeah. You have very mixed feelings about
it as well. It was like, oh my goodness. What's going on here?
I'm sorry. I guess it's a good exercise to revisit things that you love. Yeah.
Critical thinking.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. So, I don't know. Are you ever going to be able to watch the movie and enjoy it?
I will rewatch the movie every year or so and enjoy it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. But I think we have to ask the question, does this movie belong on the FlixWise favorites list? Andy, I know you're the one who proposed the movie. But do you think it belongs on the FlixWise favorites list?
I will never give up the ship on 16 Candles. I understand if this was my podcast, it would be on the list. I understand you're leaning towards no.
I'm leaning towards no. Emma, what do you think?
I am very moved by your love of this movie, but I'm still going to have to say no.
Thank you. I appreciate your thoughts.
Yes. I'm going to go ahead and agree with Emma. I don't think this is going to make the cut. We have to... No horrible Asian stereotypes allowed on the FlixWise favorites list, I'm afraid.
Right. But I do feel like we should mention... It's really hard to pick. We picked three movies between the three of us, but there are a lot of teen movies that I think everyone feels like a very special connection to.
Right. And I don't think we should discount that. This movie obviously spoke to you when you were 16, and we are none of us in this room are 16. We cannot, I don't think, and this movie continues to resonate. It continues to be rediscovered, and there's obviously something to it. So I don't think we should be completely dismissive. The reason that it does not make the list for me is because I can't get past the rape jokes. So there you go. There you have it.
There were no explicit rape jokes. I would think that you would say maybe the misogyny.
The misogyny.
Okay.
I cannot get past the misogyny. The movie is pretty rapey, though.
No, it's not rapey.
It's totally rapey. She
I'm
did
not.
She
rapey.
Could not consent. And that sort of made a joke.
The Caroline
could not consent, and she sort of passed around between Jake and and Ted.
She said she loved waking up in his arms.
Oh, isn't that convenient?
Just for the record, I never believed that anything happened in the back of that car.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't either. There's no way. He had on headgear in the morning.
We don't even have to go through all the things, but...
Yeah. But nevertheless...
She might have been making him feel good.
Yeah, maybe. He didn't really deserve it, but... And then he gets his friends to take pictures of her while she's passed out and make it look like they've had sex. That alone is pretty rapey. That's not cool. All right, so, in short, no way. Sorry, Andy.
It's got an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes.
All right, you hear that, Emma? We're in the minority, as usual. And that's the way we frame it, FlixWise, that is. Do you think I'm a total basket case because I denied 16 Candles entry to the FlixWise favorites list? Or do you agree that there are other films that better represent the genre? Let us know what you think on our show page, FlixWise.com. Or leave us a comment on Facebook at facebook.com/FlixWise. You can also follow us on Twitter at FlixWise. And if you'd be so kind, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, give us a rating, and maybe even leave us a comment. If you have a movie you'd like to submit to FlixWise Favorites, just email me at info@FlixWise.com. Give me a brief synopsis of the film you'd like to talk about and why you think it deserves to be included on our list. On the next episode of FlixWise, we're going to discuss the number 14 movie on the Sight and Sound Greatest Films of All Time list, Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now. And then the following week we'll have another movie in our teen movie series. Until then, I'll just leave you with this piece of advice. Never, ever let Anthony Michael Hall near your underwear. That is all.